started here. Good afternoon. I wasn't even sure if we'd have many people here this afternoon since it's coming to a close, so it's nice to see some faces. I'll just make mention that part of the reason why I do the research that I do is because I'm a mother, and it sort of made me much more interested in these issues. And I have the good fortune of having my oldest 9-year-old in the audience. She's in the back there, Phoebe. She's never seen mommy present before.
This is what women can do.
So I'll get started. I'll start with just talking broadly about sort of what led me here to this particular project. I've been doing quite a bit of research on preconception health and wellness and looking at BERFIS data and looking at sort of the health of women that are pregnant and not pregnant, and had a couple of papers recently published that sort of sorted health status by whether or not women were using contraceptive methods. And this is just sort of an extension of the research that I've been doing. It's also in part, I recently have a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to take a look at immigrant preconception health. It's sort of an area that I haven't found much in the literature, sort of looking at women that are foreign-born or U.S.-born. And so I actually included this little analysis in my proposal, which got funded. So I'm in the process of expanding this research. So preconception health and pregnancy outcome, you know, I think we all know in this audience that if further improvements are to be seen in birth outcomes, improvements are needed before conception, and that adult health may be programmed in utero, which in turn may also be influenced by a woman's health before she even becomes pregnant. Sort of the whole idea of preconception health is that a woman should have a reproductive plan, that they need to modify risk factors, and that pregnancy and intention and assessment needs to occur at every healthcare visit. Oh, I did the same thing that I want to hit the wrong button. Okay. So immigrant health, what do we know about that thus far in the literature? There's actually quite a bit in the literature that talks about immigrant health. I'm actually fascinated by this whole concept that when people move to the United States, they're healthier, and the longer that they're here, the less healthy they become. And I wondered if that sort of concept held through with preconception wellness too. Not quite sure we get at it with this little study, but that's where I'm going with thinking about some of these issues. Research does show that infants of immigrant women are less likely than their U.S.-born counterparts to die before their first birthday, to be low birth weight or preterm birth, that the longer a woman is in the U.S., it's the more likely she is to have a preterm birth. And even an interesting little study that I found, authored by Greg Alexander, for those of you who had the fortune to work with him, which I did when I was at the Missouri Department of Health, did a study that even found women internally in the U.S., if they move around, migrate within the U.S., they're much more likely to have a better birth outcome than if they don't, which I thought was really interesting. So there's a lot of research out there to talk to this idea of immigrants' pregnancy and birth outcomes. I haven't found as much that talks about women's health before they become pregnant, which is the focus of this study. I will get this clicker right and go in the right direction. So the healthy migrant theory is sort of the idea that the longer, like I said, the longer a woman is here, the less healthy she becomes. A number of studies have documented disparities in health between immigrants and U.S.-born populations, but there's very little research that I found to document the extent to which immigrant women adhere to sort of these preconception health guidelines. So we hypothesized that there were racial, ethnic, and immigrant disparities within the preconception health, and that the magnitude of these disparities are related to some social and economic indicators. Of course, we're limited on our study. It's a study of secondary analysis of data. We used the NHANES data set from 1999 to 2004. It was the publicly available data set, which means we could only have women 20 and older. We're actually in the process of getting teenagers also, because we think that's an important population to look at as well. Couldn't get it with this data set, though. So we had 3,343 women in the study. Essentially, we run some prevalence estimates, and then we do some logistic regression to estimate the odds that women will engage in certain behaviors, lifestyle behaviors. So we have four categories. We have pregnant U.S.-born and pregnant immigrant, and non-pregnant U.S.-born and non-pregnant immigrant. I know we talked about preconception health, but we actually use the pregnant women as a referent group, U.S.-born pregnant women as a referent group when I show you some of these odds, because there's quite a bit of research that suggests once a woman becomes pregnant, she's much more likely to change those behaviors, so we thought that would be a good referent group. So here's what we looked at. We looked at BMI category. We looked at alcohol use, any use, binge use or heavy use, smoking, exercise, and folic acid use. We also looked at a number of social and economic indicators under the broad, you know, demographic characteristics, which I'll talk about in a minute. Some housing characteristics, did they own or rent? Did somebody smoke in the home? We looked at if they had any history of having STIs. We looked at whether or not they had any medical conditions, heart disease, asthma. I'll go through that specifically. Acculturation is a bit of a stretch, but we looked at whether or not their household was English-speaking or not, as sort of at least a beginning to look at that. Our next study is going to try to look more deeply at that, but that's what we use in this analysis. So here's just giving you the general demographic information on our participants. You'll see on the left-hand side, you see the U.S.-born, and on the right-hand side, you see the immigrant. And then it's pregnant, non-pregnant, pregnant, non-pregnant. So, for example, if you look on the left-hand side for white, you see 71-75% of the pregnant or non-pregnant women are white, but over on the immigrant side, it's a very low percentage. Whereas you look down, 7-10% of the pregnant of the U.S.-born are Hispanic, but it's a very high percentage for the immigrant group. So sort of looking down, you can see also, if we get down to married, for example, higher percentage of the pregnant immigrant women are married, and slightly higher in terms of the non-pregnant women also. I had a lot of data on this. I took it all. I had all the confidence intervals and all that, and it was incredibly messy to look at, so I just shortened it down for this presentation. I still have a lot of data. So again, here, this is just looking at some education, income, and health insurance. You can see, for example, if you go all the way down, it sort of jumps out to me anyway, that the immigrant women are much more likely to not have health insurance than a U.S.-born, and they also tend to make less money than the U.S.-born, and have less than a high school education than the U.S.-born. So there's some at least demographic characteristics working against them. So behavioral risks. So, of course, we didn't look at the pregnant women for BMI because we didn't think that that was a reliable indicator of where they stood in BMI, but we did look at the non-pregnant women, and we see, interestingly, that when you look at the two groups, the normal weighted group, the non-pregnant immigrant women have a higher percentage of women that are normal weight than U.S.-born. They have a slightly lower prevalence of alcohol use, 86 versus 80%. Even the pregnant group, if you see U.S.-born versus immigrant, the U.S.-born are using any alcohol and a higher prevalence than the immigrant women. And their U.S.-born women are binge drinking at a higher rate than the immigrant women. So far, at least, the immigrant women are engaging in a few healthier behaviors, right? They're also smoking less, whether they're pregnant or not, than the U.S.-born counterparts. And they're also exercising a little bit more, a little bit less. So the U.S.-born women are exercising a little bit more than the immigrant women. And the looking down at the folic acid, we really had to get our brain around this because the folic acid variable in NHANES is a little different than did you take a vitamin with folic acid. We actually looked at the blood result test, and I am a PhD, not an MD, so it was really difficult to get my brain wrapped around this, but I believe that essentially there's a certain amount of folic acid that's normal, and this is the blood, what's in their blood levels, and if we believe that if it's above normal, that means they're taking extra folic acid like you're supposed to when you're pregnant, and when you're intending a pregnancy, you're supposed to have up to 400 milligrams of folic acid a day. So if we just sort of don't look at that normal category and look at the above normal, because pregnant women, of course, should be taking folic acid, and we see immigrant women have less in their blood, at least, than the U.S.-born counterpart, and the same thing for the immigrant also. So it looks like they're not equal to the U.S.-born women in folic acid use. So chronic conditions, it pretty much looks like a wash here, like it's pretty similar in terms of asthma, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, or any limitation between the two groups of women. And then social indicators. So here we have some of those other things I was talking about, acculturation. So is the household English speaking? Well, for U.S. born, you see that, you know, 80, 90% of it is, but for the immigrant woman, it's a much smaller percentage, right, significantly smaller, down to 25%. Is there smoking in the home? Well, there's more smoking in the home of U.S. born than immigrant women. And, of course, as I sort of expected, there's more home ownership in the U.S. born than the immigrant, right, up to 60%, but down to 30 and 47% for the immigrants. And a slightly greater history of having an STI under the U.S. born group than the immigrant group. So this is what we did. So this is, I'm just going to sort of highlight the green here, but I'll explain as we go through these slides what to look at. What we did was we ran the crude odd ratios for using any alcohol, you can see here at the top, any alcohol, for each group, right? And the comparison reference group was the U.S.-born pregnant woman. So if we look across that first column, we see for the U.S.-born not pregnant woman, she is 2.43 times more likely to drink any alcohol than the pregnant woman, right? And we would expect that once you become pregnant that you'll stop drinking. The pregnant immigrant woman is actually slightly less likely to drink than the pregnant U.S. woman, which is interesting. And the not pregnant immigrant woman was 1.55 times more likely to drink than the U.S.-born counterpart. Then what we did was we went down and we adjusted these crude odd ratios for each one of these different demographic, social, or acculturation variables to see if it changed that crude odd ratio by 10%. So anytime you see one that's green, it means that it changed that crude odd ratio by 10%, which then we decided to use that in our final model because we decided that could be a confounding variable and we're not sure how that's playing a role in this. So we did that for each one of these variables, and it'd probably take me more than my 15-minute allotment to walk through those details. So we'll just leave it suffice to say that the green ones suggest that for any alcohol use, age, marital status, income, having a medical condition, being acculturated, you see that only falls under the immigrant group, home ownership and having a history of STI seem to be confounding those results or changing those crude odd ratios. Binge alcohol, again, here are the ones that popped out and changed those crude odd ratios by more than 10%. Current smoking, these are the ones that change those crude odd ratios by more than 10%. Exercise, folic acid. We see any alcohol use, demographics, housing characteristic, STI history, medical conditions, and acculturation all seem to be some sort of a confounder for influencing whether or not these various groups of women that we looked at were using any alcohol. Again, for binge alcohol here, smoking, exercise, and folic acid, you can see the adjustments that were used in our final models, and I'll present that in just a second. So here we go. So any alcohol use, a non-immigrant, not pregnant woman was 3.54 times more likely to use any alcohol woman than a U.S.-born pregnant woman, which was a significant difference. Smoking, exercise, and folic acid, all under this non-immigrant, not pregnant. All, in other words, U.S.-born women that were not pregnant were more likely to drink, smoke, exercise, and not as likely to use folic acid as a pregnant woman. What jumps out to me also is on the immigrant pregnant list, those women were not significantly different than U.S.-born pregnant women in terms of these behaviors. So they were behaving at least statistically within the realm of how a pregnant U.S.-born woman would. For the not pregnant immigrant woman, in other words, that preconception group that I was interested in that I mentioned at the beginning, they were using alcohol at rates similar to pregnant women, which is good because we're trying to get this message out that if you have the chance to get pregnant, you shouldn't be drinking at all before pregnancy because it could influence your pregnancy before you even knew that you were pregnant. But they're smoking at a much higher rate. They're exercising similarly to U.S.-born women, and they're also less likely to use folic acid. And these are our adjusted prevalence odd ratios based upon that research we showed a minute ago. Then we were kind of interested in this whole issue of acculturation, so we thought we would look at acculturated or not acculturated, specifically looking at were they English speaking or not. So not acculturated, it means they didn't speak English at home, and they didn't speak English at home, and acculturated means they were speaking English at home. So at first glance, this was really interesting to me. So we looked at the pregnant woman and the not pregnant woman, and we found that the prevalence of using any alcohol, for example, in the pregnant group, was 53.6% of the not acculturated women were drinking any alcohol pregnant, but 96.3% of the acculturated group. So that would fit into our philosophy, right, our hypothesis. The longer they're here, if they're acculturated, the less healthy they become. Smoking, the longer they were here, the more likely they were to smoke. Folic acid, for the not pregnant group, the longer that they were here, the more likely they were to take folic acid. So it's almost the converse between the drinking. The only problem with this is when we started to look at this enculturation variable, the N's got really small. So the acculturated group was like down to 50 people. So it's just sort of saying this is interesting, we want to look at this more, but we don't have a big enough N to really know where to go with this, other than we're trying to get more data on that. Still interesting, though, to start to take a look at, and interesting questions to ask. You know, limitations, secondary data, self-report data. Doesn't include teenagers. It doesn't include fertility status or whether or not they're taking birth control to prevent a pregnancy. That's certainly an important consideration. And it doesn't include length of time in the U.S. for this study, although we're in the process of getting that data for our next evaluation. So pregnancy status significantly influences the odds of various behaviors, while immigrant status doesn't seem to. Preconception health status is significantly influenced by immigrant status. And acculturation, at least with this small study, seems to have an influence on pregnancy behaviors and preconception behaviors. And we need resources for educators, policymakers, and healthcare providers if we want to address these preconception health needs of immigrant women in our country. And that is the end of my study. If anybody has any questions, I'm not sure how I am on time.
You've got about 4 minutes for questions.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for your time.
I actually have a question. I think this was great. And
thank you,
Dr. Exuberant. I think this is great. Do you think that, just given what you've seen here, that preconception health counseling should necessarily be different for immigrant and non-immigrant women? I mean, in terms of just how we provide preconception counseling, provided that we provide.
I think that preconception counseling right now, the guidelines that we have came out really only in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I have a concurrent study going on in St. Louis and Jefferson City area right now where we're actually going into clinics and we're collecting data from women and saying, is it even happening in your appointment?
Yeah.
And guess what we're finding?
Well, no.
It's not even happening. Right. So I think the first step to this whole problem is we need to even get it happening for everybody. And
start
if there is
buzz about preconception counseling?
Right. Like, we need to get it going to begin with. Now, part of the issue here we saw is that a larger proportion of them don't even have health insurance, so they might not be getting into the system. So that might be where, not in the clinical setting, but more in the public sort of health setting and the education session, where we need to think about that. Language might be an issue, too, that we need to consider. But I think we even need to move it up to, we need to be doing it to begin with before we can start focusing on specific populations.
And maybe engage colleagues in family planning clinics, actually, to start talking about preconception care.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely paper. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to our next paper by Andrea McKay, and she's with the National Center for Health Statistics, CDC, and I'm a reproductive epidemiologist, so that's like one of my favorite places. I'm going to get your talk up here.